The night was no longer friendly. She felt a sudden longing for her home and family, for the little room that held everything she owned, and that was all the world she knew or wanted. The cold of space was freezing her heart. She wished now she had never come on this mad adventure. It was time, more than time, to leave. As she rose to her feet, she noticed they had been sitting on Clyde's boat and wondered what unconscious prompting of her mind had brought her here to this vessel out of all the little fleet lined up along the beach. At the thought of Clyde, a spasm of uncertainty, even of guilt, swept over her. Never in her life, except for the most fleeting of moments, had she thought of any other man but him. Now she could no longer pretend that this was true. "What's the matter?" asked Leon. "Are you cold?" He held out his hand to her, and for the first time their fingers touched as she automatically responded. But at the instant of contact, she shied like a startled animal and jerked away. "I'm all right," she answered almost angrily. "It's late. I must go home. Goodbye." Her reaction was so abrupt that it took Leon by surprise. Had he said anything to offend her? He wondered. She was already walking quickly away when he called after her. "Will I see you again?" If she answered, the sound of the waves carried away her voice. He watched her go, puzzled and a little hurt, while not for the first time in his life he reflected how hard it was to understand the mind of a woman. For a moment he thought of following her and repeating the question, but in his heart he knew there was no need. As surely as the sun would rise tomorrow, they would meet again. And now the life of the island was dominated by the crippled giant 1,000 miles out in space. Before dawn and after sunset, when the world was in darkness but the light of the sun still streamed overhead, the Magellan was visible as a brilliant star, the brightest object in all the sky except the two moons themselves. But even when it could not be seen, when it was lost in the glare of day or eclipsed by the shadow of Thalassa, it was never far from men's thoughts. It was hard to believe that only 50 of the starship's crew had been awakened, and that not even half of those were on Thalassa at any one time. They seemed to be everywhere, usually in little groups of 2 or 3, walking swiftly on mysterious errands or riding small anti-gravity scooters which floated a few feet from the ground and moved so silently that they made life in the village rather hazardous. Despite the most pressing invitations, the visitors had still taken no part in the cultural and social activities of the island. They had explained, politely but firmly, that until the safety of their ship was secured, they would have no time for any other interests. Later, certainly, but not now. So Thalassa had to wait with what patience it could muster while the Earthmen set up their instruments, made their surveys, drilled deep into the rocks of the island, and carried out scores of experiments which seemed to have no possible connection with their problem. Sometimes they consulted briefly with Thalassa's own scientists, but on the whole they kept to themselves. It was not that they were unfriendly or aloof. They were working with such a fierce and dedicated intensity that they were scarcely aware of anyone around them. After their first meeting, it was 2 days before Laura spoke to Leon again. She saw him from time to time as he hurried about the village, usually with a bulging briefcase and an abstracted expression, but they were able to exchange only the briefest of smiles. Yet even this was enough to keep her emotions in turmoil, to banish her peace of mind, and to poison her relationship with Clyde. As long as she could remember, he had been part of her life. They had had their quarrels and disagreements, but no one else had ever challenged his place in her heart. In a few months, they would be married. Yet now she was not even sure of that, or indeed of anything. Infatuation was an ugly word, which one applied only to other people. But how else could she explain this yearning to be with a man who had come suddenly into her life from nowhere, and who must leave again in a few days or weeks? No doubt the glamour and romance of his origin was partly responsible. But that alone was not enough to account for it. There were other Earthmen better looking than Leon. Yet she had eyes for him alone, and her life now was empty unless she was in his presence. By the end of the first day, only her family knew about her feelings. By the end of the second, everyone she passed gave her a knowing smile. It was impossible to keep a secret in such a tight and talkative community as Palm Bay, and she knew better than to attempt it. Her second meeting with Leon was accidental, as far as such things can ever be accidents. She was helping her father deal with some of the correspondence and inquiries that had flooded upon the village since the Earthman's arrival, and was trying to make some sense out of her notes when the door of the office opened. It had opened so often in the last few days that she had ceased to look up. Her younger sister was acting as receptionist and dealt with all the visitors. Then she heard Leon's voice, and the paper blurred before her eyes. The notes might have been in an unknown language. "Can I see the mayor, please?" "Of course, Mr. Assistant Engineer Carroll. I'll go and fetch him, won't you sit down?" Leon slumped wearily on the ancient armchair that was the best the reception room could offer its infrequent visitors, and not until then did he notice that Laura was watching him silently from the other side of the room. At once he sloughed off his tiredness and shot to his feet. "Hello. I didn't know you worked here." "I live here. My father's the mayor." This portentous news did not seem to impress Leon unduly. He walked over to the desk and picked up the fat volume through which Laura had been browsing between her secretarial duties. "A Concise History of Earth," he read, "from the dawn of civilization to the beginning of interstellar flight." "And all in 1,000 pages? It's a pity it ends 300 years ago." "We hope that you'll soon bring us up to date. Has much happened since that was written?" "Enough to fill about 50 libraries, I suppose. But before we go, we'll leave you copies of all our records, so that your history books will only be 100 years out of date." They were circling around each other, avoiding the only thing that was important. When can we meet again? Laura's thoughts kept hammering silently, unable to break through the barrier of speech. And does he really like me, or is he merely making polite conversation? The inner door opened, and the mayor emerged apologetically from his office. "Sorry to keep you waiting, Mr. Carroll, but the president was on the line. He's coming over this afternoon. And what can I do for you?" Laura pretended to work, but she typed the same sentence 8 times while Leon delivered his message from the captain of the Magellan. She was not a great deal wiser when he had finished. It seemed that the starship's engineers wished to build some equipment on a headland a mile from the village and wanted to make sure there would be no objection. "Of course," said Mayor Fordyce expansively in his "nothing's too good for our guests" tone of voice. "Go right ahead. The land doesn't belong to anybody and no one lives there. What do you want to do with it?" "We're building a gravity inverter, and the generator has to be anchored in solid bedrock. It may be a little noisy when it starts to run, but I don't think it will disturb you here in the village. And, of course, we'll dismantle the equipment when we've finished." Laura had to admire her father. She knew perfectly well that Leon's request was as meaningless to him as it was to her, but one would never have guessed it. "That's perfectly all right. Glad to be of any help we can. And will you tell Captain Gold that the president's coming at 5 this afternoon? I'll send my car to collect him. The reception's at 5:30 in the village hall." When Leon had given his thanks and departed, Mayor Fordyce walked over to his daughter and picked up the slim pile of correspondence she had none too accurately typed. "He seems a pleasant young man," he said. "But is it a good idea to get too fond of him?"
"I don't know what you mean."
"Now, Laura, after all, I am your father, and I'm not completely unobservant.
He's not a bit interested in me."
"Are you interested in him?"
"I don't know. Oh, Daddy, I'm so unhappy."
Mayor Fordyce was not a brave man, so there was only one thing he could do. He donated his handkerchief and fled back into his office.